PICO Report is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
PICO Report is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
And financially supported by listeners like you.
Good morning and welcome to Eco Report for WFHB. I'm Dan Young.
And I'm Maria McKinley with news the Earth wants you to hear. Senator Dan Coats, along with 45 other senators, has sent a letter to President Obama urging him to approve the controversial Keystone XL pipeline. The senators sent the letter last Friday, which was the sixth anniversary of TransCanada's application to build the pipeline. Coats contends the project could combat unemployment and increase American energy independence. This past weekend, hundreds of thousands of climate activists rallied in New York City, many voicing opposition to the pipeline. The pipeline would transport tar sands oil from Canada to the Gulf of Mexico. The State Department estimates the project would create more than 40,000 temporary jobs during construction, but only about 50 of those jobs would be permanent.
Organizers of an Open Streets in Bloomington event received permission this week to move forward, but not without a struggle. Open Streets Bloomington asked the city's Board of Public Works to let them shut down half a mile of 7th Street from the Banneker Community Center to the Beeline Trail. Their event is scheduled for October 5th. One of the organizers, Beth Rosenbarger, described Open Streets as an opportunity to use the street in an unconventional manner.
It allows neighbors to use it as a meeting space, especially when it happens in a neighborhood. And similar to these photos I have up here, these are different Open Streets events. You can fill it with activities, promote local businesses, and allow people to come out and engage in those activities.
This is the second annual Open Streets event in Bloomington. Some residents told the board they objected to the street's closure. John Bavender lives on West 7th Street. He also owns other houses on the street.
Usually on Sundays, that's a good day for me to do some property maintenance on some of my other properties up and down the street. And I need to have access to 7th Street to haul my equipment and haul away brush and possibly take a lawnmower and do lawn mowing, things that have to be done.
Only two of the three members of the Board of Public Works were present. Both of those members, James McNamara and Charlotte Zidlow, stated that they should have been consulted earlier in the process. McNamara said he felt pressured to approve the street closure because the event is so soon.
The only reason I'm voting for this tonight is because if I vote no, and there's only two of us, it shuts down the event. An awful lot of people put an awful lot of time including your vendors and your volunteers and all these people are planning to do this.
Throughout the U.S. and Canada, there have been more than 100 Open Streets events since 2010. A local architect, Mark Cornett, told the board that these type of projects typically face opposition at first.
All things that get started that turn out to be great opportunities for a community typically have their detractors in the beginning. And when you're talking about the neighborhood and ground up versus open streets, I'm not as familiar with the folks that are doing this, but it's not about picking a specific neighborhood over and over again. It's about moving things around. So it can't come from, hey, my block's gonna have a block party. It's not that type of event. It's a concept of a citywide opportunity to see the community in a different way.
The board later voted in favor of the event with the caveat that organizers must work with city staff to determine the hours of the closure. McNamara said he won't support open streets in the future.
Opponents of single-use plastic bags in Bloomington hope to see an ordinance on the issue in place soon. Towns, cities, and even states across the country are passing laws intended to limit the use of plastic bags, which, when disposed of, pollute the air, water, and land. Jean Limecooler is a member of Bring Your Bag Bloomington, the local community pushing for an ordinance.
Our intention is to eventually pass an ordinance that would regulate the dispersal of single-use plastic bags in the community to try to reduce their numbers. And we're still researching and talking to a lot of people, and we haven't yet determined exactly what form that will take, so we're working towards that.
As Limecooler explains, the impetus for the formation of the committee comes from the Center for Sustainable Living, a Bloomington-based nonprofit formed in 1992 and focused on exploring ecologically sustainable ways of thinking, living, and interacting in our community.
We'll be working with the City Council to start with. We'll work on a city ordinance, and then it may get picked up by the county later. Hopefully, that's what we would hope.
The committee's initial focus is on the city because most of the large grocery stores and big box stores that generate plastic bags are within city limits. Limecooler states over 140 municipalities across the country have passed single-use bag restriction ordinances. Most of these are coastal cities where disposed bags are a major polluter of beaches. The Lakeside City of Chicago has a new bylaw that goes into effect next year, mandating that retailers charge customers a small fee if they wish to use plastic and paper bags provided by the store. The state of California is currently studying a bill that would ban single-use bags. 80 countries around the world have passed legislation to restrict the use of plastic bags. Bloomington's advocates are leaning toward the model adopted by Chicago.
We're looking at the effectiveness of different types and what we think will work here in Bloomington. A charge for single-use bags, paper, and plastic at the checkout is extremely effective, has been shown to be very effective in Ireland and in Portland. We've seen statistics up to 80% reduction in the use of bags when you charge for them. So we'll be looking at what we think is a reasonable charge. It needs to be enough of a charge to incentivize people to bring their own bags. So finding what that amount is will be one of the issues that we'll be looking at, and also whether to do an outright ban of plastic bags or not.
Advocates for the ordinance say they might include paper bags because of the resources that go into the manufacturer, especially their impact on forests.
It's very important to us to educate the public and ease them into the idea before this is something that actually goes into effect, because we don't want to shock the public with it. We want them to also realize the logical reasons for doing this. We want everybody to be on board with this. I mean, of course, we can't get 100%, but, you know, we don't want people to be taken by surprise. So we would like to do quite a bit of education with the public beforehand.
The Bring Your Bag Bloomington Committee holds monthly meetings at the Bloomington branch of the Monroe County Public Library, located on Kirkwood Avenue in downtown Bloomington.
Starting this week, Wyoming's wolves will again be protected under the Federal Endangered Species Act. Under past protections, the state's gray wolf population had begun to recover following the total extermination of wolves in the continental U.S. But Wyoming's wolves had these protections removed in 2012 by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. At that time, the federal agency claimed 350 wolves was enough for Wyoming, which is a state three times the size of Indiana. Since then, Wyoming allowed wolves deemed a threat to be killed on site and authorized sport hunting of wolves. This resulted in 219 wolves being killed in the state over the last 2 years. Although reproduction has partially replenished the population, Wyoming's wolves are declining at a high enough rate that they could vanish in a decade. But this week, a federal judge overruled the 2012 removal of federal protections for Wyoming's wolves in response to a lawsuit. The suit was filed by the Humane Society of the United States and the Fund for Animals. The state of Wyoming has threatened to take the case to a higher court, and a spokesman for the Federal Fish and Wildlife Agency stated their lawyers were reviewing the judge's decision.
Executive Chairman Eric Schmidt is pulling Google's support of a conservative political group because he believes it is lying about climate change. The group, American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, lobbies state legislatures on a variety of issues. ALEC is well known to write legislation for states so that it can be introduced without effort on the part of legislators. Several of ALEC's templates have been introduced in Indiana. Executive Chairman Schmidt, in an interview on National Public Radio, said Google decided to cut its support of the group because of its stance on climate change. Google has specifically cited legislation advanced by ALEC, which would roll back government mandates for increased use of renewable energy. Schmidt said Google's previous support of ALEC was due to an unrelated issue, which he did not identify. He said many in the company felt their previous alliance with ALEC was a mistake that should be corrected. Schmidt also said Google strives to make decisions in politics based on facts and that he believes ALEC is literally lying about climate change. That's a look at EcoNews from Bloomington and beyond for this week. We want to know what you think of current environmental issues. Send your comments and story ideas to earth@wfhb.org. For Eco Report, I'm Maria McKinley.
And I'm Dan Young. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
In today's Eco Report feature, conservationist Gary Moody talks about the environmental impact of the Williams Dam near Bedford and fills us in on an upcoming showing in Bloomington of the film Damnation.
This is Dan Young for Eco Report. On September 20th, I spoke on the phone with Gary Moody, a citizen conservationist from Shelbyville, Indiana. Several years ago, Moody founded an advocacy group focused on water quality and stream ecology called FISH, which Moody stated is an acronym for Fishable Indiana Streams for Hoosiers. Moody is currently involved with activism surrounding the Williams Dam on the East Fork White River downstream from Bedford. He's also helped organize a showing of the film Damnation here in Bloomington on Sunday, October 12th at the Buskirk Chumley Theater. Here, Gary Moody describes some of the environmental impacts of the Williams Dam and how he first became aware of them.
Well, like a lot of people in Indiana and even in Monroe County and surrounding areas, I had never heard of Williams Dam. So I was shocked to find that there's a low-head dam. It's about 15 feet tall. That's sort of the category. Low-head dams are typically under 25 feet or so tall. It's blocking the East Fork White River at, obviously, the little village of Williams. It's downstream of Bedford. It's been there for 100 years. It's blocking about 4,900 square miles of the East Fork White River watershed, which includes, you know, the Muscatatuck, the Big Blue, which is runs through Shelbyville here. And by blocking, I mean it's blocking fish passage up to the rest of that watershed. Williams Dam was built, it was completed about 1912 as a hydropower generator. And when it went through a couple of ownerships, wound up with Public Service Indiana, they stopped generating power there, mothballed it, whatever, in 1958, turned it over to the state. You know, that wound up with the Department of Natural Resources. It's basically been a big fishing pier. And it creates sort of a reservoir upstream of it where people, you know, run around in powerboats and stuff like that. But it's what we call a deadbeat dam in that it serves no purpose. It's screwing up the ecology of the East Fork White River, both in terms of fish passage and water quality and habitat and various things. This process with repowering the dam is quite complex. It involves various federal and state agencies, but everybody acknowledges that the lake sturgeon, which is an endangered species, is present below the dam and not above the dam. Now, some really feisty fish have been able to passage over the dam at really high flood stage, including the Asian carp. That's pretty much it. You know, the sturgeon, they're bottom-dwelling fish. You've got little darters, various endangered and threatened species, which, you know, can't make that jump even at flood stage and with all the current. And one of them, in fact, is a host for an endangered species of mussels. And that's another problem. You've got, there are mussels present in that system below the dam, but the way they reproduce is the larvae attach themselves to fish, like that particular darter, and they take them upstream. And so dams fragment the ecosystem, which is bad. It's sort of like, you know, chopping the rainforest into little bits. It's the same with the river system.
According to Moody, prior to 2008, officials at the Indiana DNR had expressed interest in removing the Williams Dam because of safety concerns and its environmental impacts. But at the end of 2013, the state announced that it had entered into a contract to have the hydroelectric facility at the dam refurbished to produce electricity again. The restored hydroelectric facility at the Williams Dam would produce about 4 megawatts of power, which would be sold to the nearby Crane military installation. Moody says that FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, has given the project a clean environmental bill of health. The project has also been promoted as an environmentally friendly alternative to producing electricity by burning coal or other fossil fuels.
In 2004, the DNR was going to tear the thing down. They rejected an application for reactivating it, saying that it's bad ecologically and it's deteriorating. It's in terrible shape. If, you know, anybody can go down and look at it and see. It needs to go. So, you know, that changed because of politics and the ensuing administrations at the State House in 2008. This company, they're called Free Flow Power. They're operating under another name here in Indiana. It's called Payne Bridge. But in any case, they filed their application in 2008. Very, very few people knew about this until, you know, they started issuing press releases in December. But throughout, they've been painting this as very green, and hydro is, in terms of, you know, air emissions. Obviously, there's no pollutants like when you're burning coal. However, there are trade-offs. You know, we don't want species to go extinct because of a dam. And the scheme here is to sell the power to Crane Naval Weapons Station, and that's been the intent all along. So, you know, I'm not begrudging that complex their power, but it comes at the expense to, you know, not only the wildlife in the stream, but everybody above the dam. You know, there are sport fish that can't passage that. It affects everyone upstream. In 2004, the DNR was going to tear the thing down, and that's what really still needs to happen. But there should have been an environmental impact statement done on this project, and that's what we petitioned FERC for last spring, and they rejected that. And their findings are just all screwed up. You know, they don't even know that Asian carp has passed the dam, or claim not to. The federal agency, FERC, painted this as a very minor project and even found that there's no significant impact. It's under NEPA, as the acronym. They have to do an environmental review, and there are various levels of that. They use an environmental assessment, which is very sort of quick and dirty compared to the full environmental impact statement. I also want to mention that because of this really shoddy and secretive process that's gone on since 2008, I mean, when they finally announced it and let it be known to the public, state owns that dam. That's a public facility, by the way. When they did that in December, it was past the time for any significant public involvement in any legal intervention, which I tried to do belatedly, and they turned it down as untimely. it was a good old boy process. They announced it when it was a done deal, and that's the way things typically work in Indiana, unfortunately. But, you know, with the federal involvement, it shouldn't have been that way, particularly with, you know, things like the Endangered Species Act involved. But because of what happened, we have a petition online, a couple of them actually. Go to freetheriver.com, and there's more information and links there. And also showing the film Damnation in Bloomington to raise awareness of this and other dam issues. That beat dams that are being removed all over the country, and that's what Damnation shows is one example of that out in Oregon and what that did for the ecosystem there. So we're going to show that at the Buskirk Shumway Theater on October the 12th. That's a Sunday. It's going to be at 7 p.m. It's only $5, and it's a blockbuster film. It's got a big buzz going around the country since it debuted at South by Southwest last spring.
That was Gary Moody from the advocacy group FISH talking about the environmental impacts of the Williams Dam near Bedford and about an upcoming film showing of the movie Damnation on October 12th in Bloomington at the Buskirk Shumway Theater. For Eco Report, this is Dan Young. It's 11:54 a.m., and you're listening to Eco Report on WFHB, the show the Earth wants you to hear. Would you like to join the Eco Report crew? WFHB is looking for volunteer reporters and engineers to join our award-winning news department. We provide training and will work with all schedules. Just bring your love for the environment. For more information, email volunteer@wfhb.org or call 812-323-1200.
It's time now for In Nature, a new segment on Eco Report focusing on the flora and fauna of South Central Indiana.
Many members of the aster family bloom in the fall. Among these is mistflower, aptly named because its small blue flowers have no visible petals and appear mist-like from a distance. This perennial plant enjoys moist areas, so plant them in a wet area and enjoy them seasonally while providing nectar for migrating monarchs. Many of the flowers in this genus, Eupatorium, are medicinal. Among them is Jopai weed, which derived its name from a Native American theme promoter who used it medicinally. It also enjoys damp areas, and its pink corymba flowers bloom somewhat earlier. Boneset received its Latin species name perfoliatum because the joined opposite leaves appear to be perforated by the stem. The leaves were once used to treat breakbone fever. The doctrine of signatures, a commonly held belief by religious botanists, asserts that God provides signs for plant use. Thus, the unbroken leaf was thought to be a remedy for broken bones. Look for these plants on roadsides and in damp woods through September, and leave room in your garden for these beautiful natives.
That wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by Solar Systems of Indiana, designing and installing renewable energy systems. SSI is a member of the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners and works to foster the acceptance of solar energy across the Midwest through education and consultation. More information by phone at 812-336-2785 or online at solarsystemsofindiana.com.
This week's news stories were written by Allison Bechtish, Joe Crawford, Linda Green, Norm Holy, David Murphy, and Dan Young. This week's feature was engineered by Dan Young. Our broadcast engineer is Dan Withard. Producers for Eco Report are Kelly Miller and Dan Young. Executive producer is Allison Bechtish. For WFHB, I'm Maria McKinley.
And I'm Dan Young. Join us next week on Eco Report when Anne Sterling from the Humane Society of the United States talks about the upcoming ballot referendum on wolf hunting in the state of Michigan. Eco Report, encouraging you to take personal responsibility for the world in which we live.
You've been listening to the Eco Report,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
Eco Report is your independent, ecologically inspired news source
for South Central Indiana,
bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the Eco Report staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org.